All right, welcome to episode 12 of Joke Artists. We're your host, Ryan Dever.
And I'm Jason Katz.
And you're Jason Katz, and I love that about you. And today on the show, we have an incredible comedian, Jessica Kirsten. She is, well, to use incredible, again, absolutely incredible. She's hilarious, so talented. She is just, she is comedy. She has a new FX feature-length documentary coming out called Hysterical that's premiering at the South by Southwest Festival in March. She's been on, you know, the late night shows. She's been on Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, Jay Leno, The View. She was in the HBO show Crashing. She was in the film The Comedian with Robert De Niro, and she was also a consultant on that. She talks about how she basically got to direct Robert De Niro, which was absolutely incredible to hear.
And don't forget, she also has two podcasts:
Relatively Sane and Disgusting Hawk. Both hilarious. Disgusting Hawk you can find on Gas Digital, or you can watch it and listen to it on YouTube.
Yeah, well, we got to talk to her about everything in comedy, and she's just so knowledgeable, and it was really, really one of my favorite interviews, and here it is.
Hi.
Jessica, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So we're super excited to hear about your documentary that's coming out on FX. It's going to be premiering at the South by Southwest Festival called Hysterical. Could you talk to us a little bit about that, what we can expect from it, and how you kind of got into producing that?
Sure. I was doing a spot, a stand-up spot at Stand Up New York in New York City, and there was an advertising agency was there for a party. So they had some comics come up and do jokes, and they responded to what I did. And then they, you know, met with me after the show and said, we're looking to do a project with female comics, and we don't know really what it is, but we'd love to meet with you. And I started to meet with them with my manager, Jim Serpico. And we got to talking, and we were going to make a short film with them and get sponsors through their advertising agency. And it didn't work out. But during that time, we met with a production company in California that works on documentaries a lot. And we connected, and my manager brought the deal to FX, and they loved it. And they decided they wanted to, you know, have the movie on their network. So we filmed it for about a year.
Wow.
And thank God we finished it before COVID.
Really?
We switched directors, and it was a whole thing. But it's amazing. It's a documentary about female comedians, and we have Kathy Griffin in it, and Margaret Cho, and Fortune Feimster, and Eliza Schlesinger, a lot of people. And there's about 15 of us that are featured. And I ended up executive producing with these other people, and it came out amazing, and I can't wait for people to see it.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's really cool.
Did you
have the idea like a little while back to start it off, or was it sort of like a more recent idea when you started going into production?
Well, I never had the idea of doing it, but then when I was approached by the advertising agency, you know, I got into it. Yeah, and I love producing, and have had a couple of other experiences where I produce stuff. So it all just happened fast. And
that's awesome.
And then we made it, and it's coming out. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, that's incredible. Yeah, South by Southwest. I mean, that's huge. And FX.
When you're producing something like that and you're in it, is that difficult to, you know, because you're the producer, you're in it as well. Is it sometimes difficult to see yourself perform as a producer that's thinking, okay, what's best for this documentary to tell the story? This joke works better here. How does that kind of work when you're playing both roles? Or is it an issue at all?
No, it's a good question. I mean, I played a very big role in getting people to do it. You know, I texted everyone and said, I'm working on this. I think my relationship with a lot of people made them know that it would be a good project, and they wouldn't get taken advantage of or look, you know, seen in the wrong light or whatever. So that helped a lot. And I had to take a step back and not, you know, not just want to be in the whole thing constantly and really just make it the best it could be. You know, I'm in it a bunch, but it's the kind of thing where, you know, you're not just talent. So it's not, it wasn't about me. It was about making the best movie possible. And, I had a very, you know, it was important for me to be behind the scenes with the whole thing with the director and the edits and all of that, because I was obviously the only comic that was a part of creating it.
That's awesome. That must be a really cool experience to, you know, be a lifelong comedian where, you know, the success of the jokes and the show is on you, and then to shift to a super collaborative effort where you're working with other comedians and other, you know, editors and shooters and whatnot. How does that dynamic kind of change you as a comedian, if at all?
Well, it didn't, I mean, it didn't change me as a comedian. It was a little difficult because there's a ton of people who probably wanted to be in it, who aren't in it. But I, you know, suggested a lot of women, and they, yeah, we all did, but they kind of chose, you know, some of the people that they'd want in it. That it's not that I would, like, I would have chose everyone they chose, but I would have loved to see other people in it too. It's just, yeah, you can't have too many people in the movie. And also it's a, you know, it's a weird thing when you're a comic and it's your friends. And I had to look at it from a more critical standpoint.
Yeah.
Right. That's, yeah.
That's awesome. And more specifically in your comedy, shifting into just kind of, you know, we're obviously fans of yours. That's why we're having you on. Your style of comedy is a lot of crowd work. And we were, you know, wondering how long it kind of took you when you were starting out to build that confidence. I know you said in an interview that, you know, one of the toughest parts about doing stand-up is kind of bringing that confidence and convincing the audience in a way that you are funny, that you are, that, you know, that you should, you know, be there and they should be laughing at you. How, you know, what went into you developing that strength of yours as a comedian with crowd work and then, you know, shifting into talking to yourself, of course, if a joke mm-hmm. doesn't land a certain way, you have that kind of defense mechanism that you can still quickly turn it around. What kind of went into building your comedic voice?
Well, I spent years hosting shows. I used to run shows at Gotham Comedy Club in New York, mm-hmm. and I used to host them a lot, these new talent shows, and it really helped me. I remember talking to Joy Behar early on when I started, and she's like, you should host a lot. It'll make you really comfortable with the audience and comfortable talking to the crowd. And that helped a lot. And I loved, you know, I was always quick. So it was very easy for me to like improv and come up with funny stuff on the spot. And some people, that's not their strength.
Right.
But that was a strength for me. And also I love talking to people, and I see comedy as more of a conversation. I don't see it as like a monologue. I think it's really important. The turning to my back to the audience and talking to myself, that just came like one night I was doing a show and something I didn't do well. And I just turned around and like motivated myself. And then for a long time it didn't work because you have to do it at the right time. Like it really has to only be when I feel uncomfortable or something happens in the room or a joke doesn't land, or else it kind of makes no sense when I'm having that conversation with myself.
Right.
And it's really like a bomb line. You know, I taught comedy for so many years, and I used to tell people you have to have a way out.
Mm.
Whether it's, you know, you look at a guy in the audience and say, sir, please laugh, I have issues with my father, or wow, it's dead in here, or what is this, a funeral? Like whatever you have to say to break the tension, it's
right.
really important.
Yeah, the bomb lines, that's really interesting. I've never heard it explained in that way. That's so cool. I mean, so you're saying you go in, you write your jokes, but you also write all your backup jokes as like a subcategory. If this doesn't go well, this is like, as you said, my way out.
I think that's very important, especially when you're starting out. I mean, when I say starting out in your first 10 years, I mean, it's like, you know, one of the worst things I can see a comic do is if it's not going well and people aren't laughing, they just keep going, so what else can I say? It's like, no, it's not going well. And you need to address it. And it really changes the whole energy. Like you all of a sudden will start doing well if you just point out what's going on.
Right.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. What's wild about, and I find so like fascinating about you, is that you have like a lot of self-deprecation in your humor, but it's so confidently done. if that makes sense.
Yeah. I know it. You know what? That's a very good observation, because I've thought of that myself, that I do that. I think that's part of who I am. It's like, you ever hear that term "piece of shit in the center of the universe"? It's like, you know, it's like I have so much self-hatred, but then again, I know I'm good. Like it's I'm both people. So I think that's what comes out in my act. And that's really true for me.
Yeah. And I think that's why people really connect with your comedy too.
Right.
Because you're coming from a place that is a conversation that is like, hey, I'm not better than you. I know I'm a little bit physically raised up above you on the stage here, but this is a conversation. Mm-hmm. This is for all of us to kind of turn off our brains for a little bit and have some fun. I think that's what's contagious about your stand-up.
Thank you. I mean, I think I always say to people, the goal is to have people to want to hang out with you after the show.
Right.
Like if you can have people want to be your friend, you're in good shape. You know, when people come up to me and be like, oh my God, I wish you could come out and hang out with us. Like that's the goal. Because if you think about anyone who does really well, the comics who are big right now, especially, you know, it's the Bert Kreischer. It's like these people that you just want to hang out with and have a beer with, or hang out in your living room. And I think that's really, really important. And I know that I'm likable that way. You know, I'm not, I can really gel with people. I always could. So I have that. I'm grateful for that, because a lot of comics are brilliant, but they don't have that gift of connecting with people.
Yeah. Is that ever like almost like a curse in a way though, too? Because everyone thinks, you know, they can be your friend, and then afterwards, maybe you don't want to see all the fans.
Yeah, it's hard for me. I have to be honest. Like, I like them, but it's very draining when you're doing. You know, especially on the road when you're doing five, six shows in three nights, and it's a lot. And I know some people can do it. You know, they can hang out for hours and they'll go to the bar with people, and I can't do that. I wish I could, because it really does help, but I can't. And I've learned to preserve my energy, and I can be aloof. I like that word, because it's not that I'm rude or stand. I'm just aloof with people. You know, a lot of people really feel like you're friends with them, and sometimes they'll get hostile. Like someone will send me a message on Instagram and be like, you know, want to ask me something, and then I don't get right back, and they're like, I don't understand why you're not getting back to me. Like, we're not friends. Like, why are you? What makes you think I have to get right back to you? It's crazy.
That is an amazing way to live your life, though. I'm very curious about this person that's going around messaging people being like, you know, doggone it, I don't know why these people aren't getting back to me. This doesn't make any sense. Yeah. Complete strangers not answering
me. Because they really do feel like they know you.
Yeah.
When someone gets too familiar, and like, I can always tell if someone's sending me too many messages and getting a little crazy, I just don't respond. And then it usually stops. But it's, it's a lot, especially when you're a comedian, because you're talking about such real things.
Right,
and they think they can just joke around with you and be friends with you.
Well, one of my favorite things of yours is, and I was wondering if you're doing this now, actually, for promoting Hysterical, is when you do the morning shows. Because it just seems like you have so much fun messing with everybody. And I mean, the one that stands out in my mind is when you did that morning show, and, you know, they gave you some turkey. I think it was turkey and corn. And then you just sort of, that was for everybody. And then you just went in face first and just started eating it.
Yeah, that's a lot of, you know, a lot of comics have watched that over and over and over again, because it literally is like a Saturday Night Live sketch. It's like doing this local morning show in Connecticut. And, you know, there was a point when I was sitting there and they just started ringing bells and going, telling me I said the word of the day. And I'm like, what did I say? And then I didn't even say the word. And then the host started running around, and he ran into one of the cameramen and fell down. I mean, it was so insane. I do a lot of crazy stuff on the morning shows. I'm doing a lot of interviews now for the movie, and it's really amazing how horrible some people are at interviewing people.
Like us.
Like, how did you get this?
We're sorry, by the way. We want to pre-apologize about how terrible
we are. No, not you guys. Oh my God, stop it. No, but they're, they just, you know, sometimes a guy will like completely try to be the comic and get the joke,
right.
You know, keep right. joking around. And it's just, it's, and on the road, it can be brutal because you're half asleep. You know, it's right. 6, 7 o'clock and do these morning shows. And they do help sell tickets, but they're brutal.
Oh. Yeah, but you just seem to be having so much fun on them whenever, you know, I get to see clips of it. But I was wondering, like, you know, now due to COVID, are you doing any morning sort of Zooms to promote the movie or to promote your special?
Well, I have a bunch of stuff being set up now. And a lot of the stuff I've done is over the phone or print. Like, I'll, you know, get a bunch of questions and answer them. But I do have... So, like, I have a Zoom thing set up for tomorrow where I'm being interviewed for a half hour.
Oh,
so
gotcha.
It should be interesting.
yeah, I can't wait to see that.
I'll always give the person with me who drove me there my phone and be like, can you please film this? Because I know, you know, I'll either like fall asleep on a chair while they're talking to me. I do things to, and a lot of times they don't even get it. They're like, oh my God, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm just a little tired. Like I'm pretending like I'm sleeping. I mean, that's an idiot.
And like, they have to stay so buttoned up too, which is so funny.
Right.
And they're also, it's weird because it's, you're like you said before, it's, they try to be the quirky person also, but it's TV interview humor, which is not funny. So it's like, well, you know, I know a thing or two about cracking jokes. And you're like, dear God, please, like, let a lightning bolt hit this person.
What happens after the cameras rolling on those morning talk shows? Like, so it's over, you know what I mean? Do you have to say, hey, sorry about that? Or do you just continue on and they get the joke?
Yeah, no, I continue on whether they get the joke or not. I'm not, like, I play the game in business, but I don't kiss ass. And I feel like that's the right thing to do. It's like, some people play the game and they'll be like, Joe, let's keep in touch. You know, like comics that are so chummy with everyone. I just don't have the energy. So I'm always respectful, but if they don't get the joke, it's even funnier to me. And if they do get the joke, it's great. And they're like, oh my God, you were hilarious. Thank you so much for doing this. It was hysterical.
I saw an interview with you talking a little bit about that, what you just explained, but let me repeat it now. Of you saying that you, like you said, you love catching people off guard and making them, you know, it's a weird duality of comedy. You want people to kind of turn off their brains, but also think but not think too much. But then there are the people that literally go to shows and it seems like they want to analyze every joke and they need to get it, and then therefore, you know, they don't get it or they get angry or offended or whatever. Do you think there's that's gotten, you know, the ratio of people that go to turn off and have fun and if they don't get it, whatever, versus the people that are there sitting intently trying to break you down and analyze, you know, do you think that's gotten worse as of late? I know it's difficult now because, you know, things are shut down and whatnot, but I was just curious what you think.
I'm still doing a lot of shows. So I'm still doing stuff on Zoom a lot. And I also am doing a little road work. So I do have the experiences still. I can tell you that there's a couple things. First of all, it depends where in the country you are. If you're in San Francisco, everyone's going to be tearing apart not everyone, but a lot of people are going to really, really be listening and making sure it's not offensive. And if you're in the middle of Ohio somewhere, they want to hear the offensive. It's like, I do think that a lot of people are nervous in the crowd now, and it does suck because comedy, I think, is really supposed to be like, just sit down, you know, just be present, listen to what's going on and just laugh and not analyze it or think about it. I think people need to be entertained. And the problem is, like, everyone's afraid now. What can I laugh at? What can I? What's going on with the person next to me laughing? I think it'll be better now. I think before the election, it was just a nightmare.
Yeah.
And now I think it'll be a little better.
Yeah, my hope is that people are able to now take a look because of like this pandemic and go, hey, there's like way more important things than you know, canceling comics for saying a silly joke, you know, or something like that. Hopefully,
so
you know,
stupid.
Yeah, that's my hope, is that now people go, oh, you know what? I think we should just start laughing at everything again instead of doing what we were doing before.
Yeah, I hope. Yeah, again, my hope is people go, oh, I'm in a comedy club.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm watching comedy. I mean,
yeah. Well, there are going to be people, especially like the younger generation, that are very, very sensitive. I mean, the fact that someone could hear a joke and then insist on an apology is just the funniest thing to me. It's like, you can be offended, I get it, and say something about it, but to insist on an apology, I mean, there are comics where the things that come out of their mouth, I think, are horrific, vile, and it makes me hate them as a person, but I don't watch them.
Right.
And I don't listen to them.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, that's your choice.
For that reason.
Sure.
But I would never tell them what they can and can't say.
Absolutely.
Unless they were promoting violence
of course.
You know, assault or something like that. That's different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But their point of view on something, like, where's the line?
Right.
Where do you draw the line?
And who draws it? Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's we're looking for perfection in imperfect people, which is a little silly.
Right.
Yeah.
And, yeah. You know, oh, yeah. Sorry.
No, Ryan, you go, Jay.
No, you go.
Oh, yeah, no. With that's the rest of the interview. Go, no, after you. Okay. This is welcome back to the polite, overly polite show. We'll begin anytime anybody wants to.
Well, Jessica's out of time. We ruined it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, anyway, with you know, segueing into, you know, people apologizing, whatnot, you know, you consulting on the movie The Comedian, which is about, you know, a comic that kind of has to apologize also, was that, you know, did you kind of bring, you know, what kind of element from your experience of comedy and experiencing comics apologizing and writing jokes and suffering from jokes or, you know, crowds that heckle, whatnot, how did you kind of bring that to, that, you know, the consulting in making that film?
Well, that was an unbelievable experience. I mean, that was another example of me just performing at the Comedy Cellar, and De Niro was there and just connected with me. And,
oh, that's so cool.
I met with him. Yeah, I met with him that week, and he was meeting with me for me to be in the movie, he and Taylor Hackford. And then we ended up talking for 3 hours, and, you know, I told him I was teaching, and we just really connected, and I was not starstruck at all. It was the weirdest thing. I still to this day don't know why. It didn't even faze me that I was with De Niro. It just was Bob. He was just a regular guy to me, and we got along great and just formed this friendship, and he really trusted me. And it was an incredible thing, because I had to teach him how to look and act like a comic who's been doing it for 36 years. And he literally said it was like one of the hardest roles he ever had to play.
Sure.
Because he had to seem confident on stage. And, you know, he wore this thing in his ear while he was performing a lot or practicing, and I would be talking to him from a microphone, and it was unbelievable. And if I, like, you know, I'd see someone in the crowd doing something and be like, Bob, look at the guy in the blue shirt, and say, da da da. You know, it was like,
wow.
It was really cool.
That's so cool. Were those live shows, or were those kind of test audiences for filming, or so how did that work
those
when you were mic'd up?
Some were test, and like, but even during the live performances for the movie, like I had a scene with he and Leslie Mann at the Comedy Cellar, and I was in the scene, and I like was, you know, I was saying cut in between the scene and like giving them lines, and then I would go back to the acting. And It was the most incredible experience I've had since I started stand-up, because I got a producer credit and comedy consultant credit, and I was in it. And also, Taylor Hackford would hate if I said this, but it's really true. I ended up like directing, not directing, but like, I guess, what's the word? I was directing, like consultant, because, for example, there was a scene with Leslie Mann and De Niro where they couldn't get intimate. And Leslie was like, Jessica, I can't do it. Like, he's so much older. I mean, he's so attractive, but like, I don't know what to do to get, and what they wrote is not working for me. So I met in a room with the two of them and came up with a whole plan. And it's in the movie, like the whole scene with them is what I came up with. And it was just
wow,
unreal. Yeah.
Wow, that's so, wow.
So I mean, I discovered so many things I can do that I didn't know I could do. And it was really incredible.
That's, I mean, that's amazing. That kind of reminds me of a question that I did want to ask you. Doing all these ventures and figuring all this stuff out, what do you think your end goal would be? Like, do you want to direct more? Do you want to consult more, produce, and still do stand up at the same time? And like, or maybe a sitcom? Or
I have a sitcom pilot. I mean, not, I'm writing a script for NBC Peacock and filming a presentation reel, and it's a story. It's a deal that I got with Bonnie McFarlane. We're co-writing it, and my manager's, a co-producer, executive producer, and so we're in the process of doing that now. And it's about my life. So, so that's really cool. And then I'm now looking to, in the process of making a couple of other documentaries. So, I didn't. Even before all this, I was like, I don't want to just do stand-up. Like, I love producing and I love writing and I would love to direct one day. I always, honestly, my dreams the whole time was to be on Saturday Night Live. And it just didn't happen. And I used to, and I love doing sketch. But I could see myself having a talk show or being on a panel show or possibly a sitcom. I want to do a ton of different things. You know, I love making movies and TV shows and seeing the end product. It's incredible. It's like, it's an amazing thing. It's very stressful, as you know, but it's to see it get done and you know, go on TV or seen in theaters is so cool.
I mean, yeah, that must be incredible to be involved in it. You know, you're doing something, I guess, sort of new. I mean, you're a teacher also, so that kind of goes hand in hand with directing and consulting for sure. But the, like you said, to for it to be done and you come through on the other side and you're like, whoa, I did this and now I get to sit back and watch it. That must be kind of, I mean, it absolutely surreal. Like, it's just like, talk about checking a box off. I mean, that must be absolutely nuts. And then it's, I guess then it sets in and you're like, oh, I was just working with De Niro. What? You're like, that's so cool.
I think working with him and Harvey Keitel and Danny DeVito, I mean, the list goes on and on and on is, you know, I can say, God, I did it. Like after that, I was like, this, that's what more can I even ask for? But, you know, from working on this film, the documentary about female comics in the United States, I thought, why don't I work on a documentary about female comics around the world? So now I'm in the middle of that. Like, I just was like,
oh, cool.
I think it's a great idea. So now I'm on Zoom calls every week interviewing female comics from all over the world. And it is so cool. It's like, I'm talking to all these women who are doing comedy in the craziest places, who have the craziest situations and the differences between like how they're treated and, and the comedy scene and their, and where they came from and everything. It's so cool. And it's not even like a, you know, I mean, you know, making a documentary is not a huge moneymaker, but it's so interesting. And did I ever think I'd be making documentaries like 3 years ago? Never.
Wow.
I just like having my hand in a bunch of different things. And I think it's very important now in this business. No matter what you do, you have to have 10 things going on to hope that one gets going.
Yeah. I always wondered if that was a New York City thing, though, or if it was global, you know, wise, just because, like, you know, myself and Ryan, you know, we always have a, we're always doing a million different things. And I'm always like, is that the city making me do this? Or is that my ambition? I'm not sure. But I don't know, you know, what
I
you think about it.
I mean, the city does. Yeah, it seems like there's so much talked about in LA, and it's some of, a lot of it doesn't go anywhere. Like people just keep meeting,
right,
at 1 o'clock for
people like lunch.
exactly. It's like New York is very, there's so much networking going on, and it's such a small community. It really is.
Right,
you know, I'll work with someone, and they'll work with someone else I'm friends with, and it's just everyone knows each other.
Yeah, I often find that, and it's always strange. Like, hey, you're on this project too? Whoa, cool. And I'm like, that's weird. And it continuously happens.
So yep.
just wanted to take one step back real quick. And I just really found a lot of the stuff on your Instagram just so funny, of you just messing with people and just things that you mm-hmm. put on there just for anything to just but make people laugh and make yourself laugh.
Yeah.
Did you always want to do that? Like, would you ever do some sort of like prank always. Show?
Yeah, that's my dream. My dream is literally before anything really is to do a prank show. And I had a couple like in development and they just never went anywhere. But yes,
I love to see that.
I've done a lot with the Impractical Jokers. Like, I'm very close with Sal and I've done their podcast a bunch of times and their crews. And I'm always, you know, even when I'm at the Comedy Cellar, I'll walk across the room and fall into a table and everyone just knows I'm going to do it. And then people run to help me. And my father was the biggest prankster of anyone I've ever known.
Oh, really?
Constantly pranked me. And I mean, every morning he tied one of my shoes for school, he tied my coat. I grew up with it. And then I realized at a very young age how powerful it is to be funny and that people love being around someone who's funny and who's silly. And so many people are silly and don't let it go and don't let it out. And I also love how uptight people are. It cracks me up.
Yeah.
It's like...
like for what?
Oh, yeah. Those are the best people to prank.
And and I commit to it. You know, my stepbrother is Zach Braff, and Zach has always said, listen, if you ever did a prank thing, that's what I would get behind. Because you're like a female Ali G. Because I'm fearless.
Right. You know, you have so many characters as well that you do.
Yeah, like the Jamie Kennedy show. Like that kind of stuff I just love.
Yeah, I would love to see you do that. I'm hoping that I'm hoping it just comes back or somehow you make those shows happen, because I would just love to see you do all those characters that you do on all the podcasts and just mess with people, because even your facial expressions, I mean, you can, a lot of times you're pranking people with just facial expressions and you know, that's a hard thing to do.
Yeah. I mean, I do have a good face for that. And I do, like, sometimes the prank is just sitting next to someone in public and just starting to cry. And
that is incredible.
Like, wailing. Yeah. It's my favorite thing. Because it's also like, I'm such a truth teller and people are so in denial of what's going on around them that it's just hysterical to me.
When they try not to see you.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Look out the side eye, like, oh no, hope this woman walks away.
Yeah.
If you were genuinely crying, that is most people's response, is to be like, oh God, I'm not here, she's not here.
Yeah, we're just two people waiting for the bus.
You know, people, how many people like me are so good at that, but it's so hard to get a show. Like, it's, even if you have, you guys know, I mean, you could be famous and great at that and not get a show. You could be like, right. Huge. It's all meant to be, and who, you know, the connections and if it's the right time and all of that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if it wasn't pandemic times here, you know, I would say, hey, just make a show, toss it on YouTube, because people, I mean, you know, are going to love it. Or if you just compile the stuff that you have on Instagram into one, like, you know, 22-minute show, because, geez, I mean, the reactions are just, they're so good, because there almost sometimes is no reaction.
Right, and, like you were
and
saying,
that's what's
people
really
try to
funny.
Keep,
yeah, just like people yeah. trying to avoid looking at what you're doing.
Yeah, like when you put on the
iPad, like, yeah.
Eye mask.
Yeah.
You put on the
eye mask, yeah.
And you're asking about stuff in the store with the eye mask on, and all the people are still acting like the customer's always right. I have to not address this, instead of being like, ma'am, you're wearing an eye mask. And you're like, oh, you mean over here? Where are the earrings?
I can't wait to do that again. Like, I can't wait to be able to go out and film that stuff, because I was filming it constantly, and now it's so impossible. Especially because of the mask and
right.
everything.
You lose
it's
the
like,
expressions.
Yeah, it wouldn't work. Right.
Right. I mean, you know, it'll come back. I mean, you know, as soon as whatever is happening with this.
It never did come back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think I hate not being able to make videos in public. It sucks.
Yeah. We're the same way, for sure. We're the same way. We've had to stop everything for quite a while. We were doing some pranks too, mm-hmm. just for fun. And we were like, oh man, we can't prank anymore.
I know. It's so much fun.
Well, that's the fun of the city, too, is you know, now it's even worse to be able to try to confront people because nobody wants to be, you know, within 6 feet, obviously. But
right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Not that they did before, but that's what always made it fun, that you were allowed to.
Yeah.
It would be funny to do some pranks and do some video stuff of like yelling at people from 6 feet away.
Yeah, just get it like a long measuring tape, hold it out. I'm 16.
Yeah, like a ruler or something. That would be really good.
Yeah, that would be funny.
Socially distanced questions. I just ask them from far away. Really personal stuff, but from a far distance. I'm sorry I have to yell because
you
of...
get along with your mother. Yeah. Yeah.
That'd be great.
And from a certain distance, I mean, from any distance, it'd be weird to ask that, but from like 6 feet, that would be very weird to just kind of, you know, you're a good distance away and kind of just gently ask about their upbringing.
Yeah. Right. Were you ever touched?
With that being said, though, I mean, one thing that I love from Disgusting Hawk, your podcast, is the reoccurring bit of the meditation commentary. And it's something that, you know, I feel like people would connect with, because I think that's the internal monologue everyone has when they're in a, you know, yoga class or wherever you're listening to meditative audio, and you're just kind of like, F you. And I love the way you do that on your show. Is that something that, you know, you find where you're writing and you go, well, this can't really translate to stand up. Let me throw this on the podcast? Or do you ever try an idea where you're like, I really want this to work on stage, and then you decide, all right, I'll just put it out on my YouTube channel or I'll put it out on the podcast?
Yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of comics talk about meditation and like they'll think of something else. But I think if I can talk about it over a real meditation,
right,
it's a way of doing it where it's not like hacky, you know. And the character stuff, I wouldn't necessarily do in my stand-up. So I love putting on wigs and all that kind of stuff and just committing to those characters and channeling those people. You know, I do it in my act, too, but it's so different because I'm not dressed up as the person.
Right. Right. You get the full, it's fully realized. Yeah.
Yeah.
And when you I saw you were in character when you interviewed Mark Normand. Is that something where, you know, kind of going back to what we were talking about, you know, one person kind of being the straight man, the other person being the crazy man. Is that difficult sometimes to interview someone in character? Because you're in a heightened state of comedy and you're interviewing somebody else that's in comedy. You know, is that a difficult balance when you're doing that?
It's very difficult because you have to be funny in that character with that character's point of view. So I have to like really become the person. And also I add a lot of physical stuff to it. Like, I'll, you know, if I'm doing the old Jewish grandmother, I'm always playing with my teeth or fixing the side of my hair or, you know, that kind of stuff. Or if I'm doing, you know, Dr. Crane, the sex therapist, I'm always like eating my hair, licking my lips or like shoving a bottle down my throat. But I love because I actually shock the comics and they laugh all the time, which is my favorite thing. I feel like it's a little bit doing prank stuff because they're shocked at how far I go with it.
Right.
And they break.
And you don't. You stay committed to it.
I don't.
That's the best part.
There's been times when I've cried laughing with someone and then we have like blooper reels and stuff. But for the most part, I keep a straight face and I love making them uncomfortable.
That's awesome. I mean, does the comic know that which character you're going to be or that you're going to be a character when they show up or do you surprise
them?
They
know I'm going to be a character, but they're just like, whatever you want to do, Jessica. But they usually find out when they get there what character it is.
Oh, that's awesome.
I'll just say, just be you. Like, I mean, I have had some comics do characters, which is hysterical also. Like their character will interview my character. One of my characters is supposed to meet, you know, Jim Norton's character soon. So that'll be great.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I love doing characters with other comics. Like Carmen Lynch, she what, like, I have that character, Dr. Pamela Crane, who's a sex therapist, and Carmen Lynch came on as my therapist and wore a wig, and it was hysterical because she was counseling me in the session.
Right. Counselor.
Mandy, the one that talks like this, like, the one that, she has different comics come in as her podcast tutors because she wants the number one podcast in the world. Her daddy pays tutors to come in and teach her. So that's fun.
And the reoccurring thing of, like, you know what my daddy did for me?
Yeah. My daddy hired me a podcast tutor.
I just thought it would be such a good cartoon doing that, like doing that Jewish grandmother, your Jewish grandmother, and then, you know, her teenage granddaughter is played by that character. I just thought both of them would work so well in a cartoon if you ever created that.
Funny thing. Yeah. Well, I did a reel with someone where it was a cartoon and I played that Jewish, old Jewish character, and she was best friends with an older Black woman and they live in a retirement community together. I was shocked that it hasn't sold. I'm shocked.
Wow.
Because it's hysterical.
Yeah.
And it was a brilliant idea. Like, they're always stealing food from buffets and they get high together and they like sleep with men. It's hysterical.
Oh,
but
man.
Just, that's what I mean. Like, what a great, beautiful idea. It was done incredibly, and it hasn't sold yet, but that just shows you it's
right.
Yeah, there's a literal catalog of all these things that I'm waiting. I want to see this, like all these things that you've created. I'm like, let me release these.
Well, let's
let me
make
see
something
them
together.
Hey.
yeah that'd be awesome.
I think this interview went well. Then
yes.
He goes, dear
you
God.
Know, this is how I ended up doing this documentary about female comics around the world, because I did it, this guy, Eugene Koza's podcast, and he's a South African comic. He's best friends with Trevor Noah. And I did his podcast and we started talking and we were like, we should do a thing about this. And now we're making it.
No, that's awesome.
That's what it's all collaborative, right. But it's, yeah, I don't know why some things sell and some things don't sell. And
oh, yeah.
I really do believe it's supposed to or it's not. What else can you think? I don't know.
Yeah, it's wild. I mean, you know, we've done countless things over the years. We're like, all right, this is going to be it. And no one saw it, you know, or like, they're like, that agent said no. You know, right. And they're like, this is great. They love you, but they just don't want to do anything with you. Oh, okay. No, or you know, or just something does sell randomly, and you're like, "What? They want that?"
Well, that's what happened with the right. Yes, I know. Something you don't even think is going to go anywhere, and then people love it, and it gets put on air. I know.
Yeah, but it is what it is. It's cool. It's fine. I think that, you know, at this point, myself, and I'm pretty sure, you know, everybody's probably just accepted at this point, like, hey, I'll make a million things and hope that one of them does something.
Absolutely. And now we're creating so much stuff ourselves, mm-hmm. and we can put it on, you know,
that's the
internet,
part.
Which is, yeah, it is. And it really opens everything up instead of having to rely on one person's opinion or decision.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing because you can now create what you want and then you could try to get people behind it, a crowd behind it, whatever you want to do, you mm-hmm. know? And the best part about it is at the end when you go, okay, I did this and I did try at least, because now you can make it yourself instead of going, well, how can I make that happen? Now you can just literally make it happen and you're like, whoa, I did it. Okay. Well, now let's see if people enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, Jay, that's like what Jason worked on Mark Norman's special, and they did a whole mm-hmm. opening bit joking about all the companies that shot them down and just like listed them one by one, and then it got sillier and sillier. But, you know, he just put that out on YouTube, his own channel, and, you know, it has like 5 million views, and it's like, oh, yeah, no, this didn't even sell. You know, it's wild. It really is a strange
time. I talked to Mark. Yeah, I've talked to Mark about it. I don't get it. Because, like, if I were an agent or a manager or a producer or the decision maker at these networks, there's just some people who are just, you know, like, you don't even have to think twice about it. But it's just an odd time.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it helps. It does help that I'm a woman and that, you know, it's they're looking for more diversity now. That's what's happening.
Yeah, sure. As well as they should be, you know, I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if Mark had a vagina. Mark had a vagina, he would
this
have seven
summer.
Specials. So.
Yeah, Tootsie, too.
Yeah, that's
yeah. Mark, I'm going to need you to do something. Hold still.
Yeah.
we'd love to collaborate and do something together. That'd be a lot of fun. We have too many ideas.
Yeah, a lot of bad ones.
Yeah, but, I do, too. And you know what? Again, I love working on so many different things because it things happen when you do that. I have so many friends that have one thing they're working on for so many years and they're so angry that it doesn't go anywhere. And I'm like, you're shooting yourself in the foot. You can't do that.
Yeah, you can't. There's no way you can do that. Like to put all your eggs in one basket, hence the cheesy saying, but you definitely can't do that. You're just like, oh, but we want to thank you so much. Seriously, for doing this. We really, really appreciate it. And I know you got to go. Because you have the set, but seriously, thank you again very much.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you guys so much for having me on, and you know, it's been great talking to you, and I'm grateful that you looked at it, so many things. And you know, a lot of times you do podcasts or interviews, and people are like, "So, what do you do?" No idea what I've done or anything.
Oh no, yeah, we've been big fans of yours for a long time, and for sure, like we'd love to collaborate on stuff. And we definitely will send some stuff your way. And there is a project that I was working on with Mark. Me and Mark can tell you about it. And you can go, Jason, I said, I don't care. And I go, oh.
No, I would love to hear. And listen, Mark Norman is one of the funniest people on earth. That guy, he's brilliant. So, yeah. And I love him as a person. He's a great guy.
Yeah.
So I'd love to do anything with Mark.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you again to Jessica. That was really just an awesome interview, and just overall, just such a funny person, but so knowledgeable about comedy and about the whole business. And Ryan, I really want to see some of those projects that she has made. I just want to see cartoon and everything.
It really shines light on just what we don't realize that we're missing out on. You know, it just shows that there's so many projects from so many comedians all over the world that have something to say, that have a great idea that we'll just never see, and we're never going to experience that specific laugh for that specific joke. So I really hope that
makes me mad.
I know, Jay. Hold on. Hang in there, pal. But don't cry. But I agree. I really hope that the projects that Jessica was talking about actually come to fruition and we get to see them and laugh.
Yeah, experience them.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm excited to see Hysterical, the FX documentary, and I'm excited to see, you know, what they talk about. Because I wanted to ask her about it. I know we ran out of time, but I wanted to ask her about what view it is going to be in this documentary. You know, like the struggles of... You know, women in comedy, or is it going to be, you know, maybe just the start of women in comedy, how it started more? I'm not sure. You know, I didn't get to ask that, but I am very curious to know all about that.
And that shows how good of interviewers we are. We forgot to ask a super important question about the documentary that she was promoting. Wow, we suck.
Yeah, we do. But, you know, that's understandable.
Well, we'll find out.
Well,
we can't wait to watch it.
If you want to hear more interviews where we suck and forget to ask the right questions, you're going to want to go and follow Joke Artists at Believe.com or, you know, anywhere that you get your podcast. You go to Apple, Spotify. I mean, we're on everything, baby.
If you want to find us, if you want to listen to us, you'll have no problem finding us. But you should also go to JessicaKirsten.com. to find out about Jessica's tour dates, everything she's got going on. They're on her website, you know, there's links to her podcast, Relatively Sane and Disgusting Hawk, which you should listen and watch both of them.
And you gotta find her on Instagram and follow her because she does these just hilarious bits, sketches, funny videos, pranks, just some of her stand-ups on there, just a lot of stuff. It's a ton of content. She's always coming up with more and more content.
Even her lives. I will say just a quick note that a lot of comedians, a lot of people do Instagram lives. And my initial thought whenever I see like that glowing thing is like, you know, like it's just going to be, I don't know. But her lives, she is she puts on a show. It is hilarious. She is always so funny, and it's so real. So if you see her doing an Instagram Live, click in and enjoy.